Blog Talk Radio.
I kind of wanted to start my show with greetings, 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 but I think it may be copyright infringement. Seth Kamens from the Sean Show. Sean, unfortunately, unable to, speak, running 102 fever. So I've brought in our guest replacement. Yeah, kind of having a tough run right now. This man, an alum of Stump the Schwab, a media personality, I would like to say, in New York City, has his own show called So Much to Talk About on Wednesday nights at 9 on MNN. I've been lucky enough to do his show 8, 9, 10 times. And I think actually when I started the radio show, I think this man, Nabate Isles, was the first person to co-host with me a long time ago. And it's great to have him back. Nabate, good to have you on.
Pleasure, Seth. Thank you for having me on, Seth and Sean, and wishing Sean a speedy recovery, and definitely I hope he gets better before the 4th, because, you know, that's the day of fireworks, so all the way around, so definitely.
Hey-o! Yes, it is. Well, not for poor Sean, but we'll keep that to the side. He's sick, so I see no reason to bring that up to him. So there's a few things that we're going to talk about, and one of the running jokes on the show is that Sean consistently tells me how little I know about baseball. And so, I may not be as knowledgeable as Mr. Isles, but I can hold my own quite nicely, and we'll be discussing our midseason awards, the All-Star game picks and who we would go with, the surprises, so on and so forth. Wanted to start off with a little bit of NBA free agency. Nabate, a New York guy. Obviously, the big trade, which I don't know quite how big it is, in comparison to the monster trade that Brooklyn and Boston pulled off last week, the Knicks getting Andre Barjani from Toronto for Steve Novak, Camby, and two picks. Do you like the deal for the Knicks?
I do. The reason why is because, number one, Barjani has more of a skill set than Steve Novak. You have to look at Andre Barjani. He's averaged 20 points a game in his career, in two seasons, I believe. I have to clarify on that, but he did score 23 points a game one season, and he's been riddled with injuries over the past 2 years, Barjani, and that's been the problem for him. Like, he's had an elbow injury, which kind of affected his shooting. He only shot 40% from the field and 31% from three last season. But Barjani, yeah, he averaged 21.4 games in 2010-2011 season. He's a 15-point career scorer. So you have to look at Barjani. The guy could score, and not just from the perimeter, but he can definitely attack to the hoop. The problem is he doesn't score his points in the paint at all for a 7-footer, and that's pretty much abominable. He would not be able to play in the 80s, 90s, even the 70s NBA with that type of game. So I think it's a good trade from the standpoint of Novak is very one-dimensional, and he disappears when teams close in on him behind the three-point line. And also, I mean, Marcus Camby, he didn't even play. Like, he should retire, basically, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for what Marcus Camby has brought to the NBA, especially from the defensive side of the ball. But at the same time, though, he was brought in to contribute and be able to be a big body, and he did not do that when the Knicks needed him in the second round versus the Indiana Pacers. So it's a good deal, and also what's really good about this deal is that 2015, the year of 2015, if you look at that year, you have Carmelo Anthony's contract off the books, Amari Stoudemire's contract off the books, Tyson Chandler's contract off the books, and now Andrea Bargnani's contract off the books. So now the Knicks cleared themselves a cap room to be able to acquire a good free agent class, especially big men. Kevin Love is a free agent. LaMarcus Aldridge, a free agent. Marc Gasol, a free agent. Rajon Rondo, who's not a center, but a point guard, one of the top point guards in the league, a free agent. So that opens up the Knicks to be able to grab two guys at least. And I'm sure they'll re-sign Carmelo Anthony, I'm sure. So it'll be interesting.
To me, it's almost a no harm, no foul deal. Mm-hmm. They're giving up the anticipation is this Knicks, I think, in most people's eyes, are the number five team in the East. I think most people would have the Bulls, Pacers, the Nets, and the Heat above them.
No question about that.
Now, does Barjani, bad pronunciation on my part, help them considerably? Probably not. He certainly doesn't help on the defensive end. He doesn't have great athleticism. He's not a great first 7-footer. His rebounding is, well, atrocious. But he does bring an offensive feel, and especially now where the Knicks, we don't know where they're going to be going on the two guard. I've heard rumors of Monte Ellis. I have no idea how they'd be able to sign him under the cap, or even in a sign-in trade, what they would offer. So I don't see that being feasible. I think J.R. Smith is going to the pretty much the highest deal possible, which the Knicks won't be able to match.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a team that's offensively challenged to begin with, and bring in Barjani. He does have a varied offensive game. You're giving up Camby, as you said, who was a kind of a nothing this year. Novak, who was didn't play pretty much the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, giving up
first-rounder in 2016, I believe, and two second-rounders. So
the draft picks are always a crapshoot at best, and the idea being in 2016, the Knicks very well may be somewhere drafting in the mid-20s. That's the hope, so it wouldn't be that significant.
Especially with the free agent class 2015, they will definitely be a contender if they're able to sign any of those two free agents that are available.
Yeah, because the idea being they're probably trying follow kind of what the Heat did, obviously, in 10, and that's a discussion for a 3-hour show, not for tonight. But the idea also being that they're trying now to kind of regain some of the publicity that the Brooklyn Nets absolutely stole from them. In regards to the massive Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce trade for pretty much the Nets' entire bench and 3 first-round picks. The Nets' hope is that they will be competitive through 16 and 18, so there will be no issue on the draft picks. Marshawn Brooks doesn't seem like he was going to get the playing time, and the players that they gave up really were not overwhelmingly significant other than Chris Humphries, who will be ably replaced by Kevin Garnett for at least two years. So I think it puts the Nets as at least a secondary threat in the East. Your thoughts?
I think the Nets actually, I'm very impressed with what they did for the bench. They signed, according to the New York Times, Howard Beck. Andre Blatch looks like he will sign a $1.4 million deal for a year. A tremendous deal to be able to sign Andre Blatch. And also, too, Kyle Korver, as good as signed with the Brooklyn Nets as well. So you look at the bench that has now been upgraded with a Kyle Korver, who I think is a very good addition. His defense has gotten better. He's a great perimeter shooter, and he's a good team guy. And now you have Kyle Korver there. Andre Blatch is back. Jason Terry off the bench, and Reggie Evans as well. They're keeping Mason Plumlee as well. So you're looking at this team and that they can get
one more player
as well.
They need a backup point guard.
They do need a backup, yes, and which they can look for that type of player. So it's going to be very interesting and Brooklyn. But the thing is that you have an inexperienced head coach in Jason Kidd. I mean, if you had someone that had experience, I think they would win possibly 60 games. You know, but Jason Kidd is not.
A trade just came over the wire. Looks like the Suns, the three-way trade, Suns, Bucks, and Clippers.
Deal.
Looks like Caron Butler. Is it Eric Bledsoe? Went to Phoenix. J.J. Redick goes to the Clippers and signs a four-year, $27 million deal. The Bucks get 2 or 3 picks. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and also Jared Dudley goes as well to the Clippers as well in that deal.
Ooh, so it gives you your shooter off the bench in Redick, unless you're going to have him start over Chauncey Billups, and potentially your starting three at with Jared Dudley.
Yes, indeed. Now what happens to Jamal Crawford? I mean, you have Jared Dudley and J.J. Redick, wing guys, that are – what happens to Jamal Crawford? Are they planning to start Jamal Crawford? I really don't think he's a starter for a championship team, and that's not disrespecting Jamal Crawford. I think he's much more potent off the bench. Like, you have
Vinny
those
Johnson.
Type of players. Huh?
He's Vinny Johnson.
Excuse me?
Vinny Johnson or Ricky
Pierce or Dell Curry
sure.
or Dell Ellis, guys like that.
That's,
you know, that are great players. And Def Les Schrempf at one time. I mean, different type of player. He had a good perimeter game, but different type of player. But I'm talking about, like, offensive potent guys off the bench that can really contribute, you know. And I think, like, there's nothing wrong with being that type of guy. But I just don't think Jamal Crawford is strong enough defensively to be able to be a starter. And now you have Dudley and Redick. They're not solid defensive players. Who will start at the two? We don't know. So
it's an interesting deal. Give credit also to Phoenix getting the point guard of the future. Although interesting because they signed one of the few players that Phoenix had is Goran Dragic, who's in the midst of a four-year, $40 million deal. I'm kind of curious to see how that's going to play out. Are him and Gortat now out on the trading block? But
well,
or are you going to start the two of them start them together? Gordon and
actually,
Gortat.
It's interesting. I think one of those guys will not be with Phoenix next year. I think Gortat, or when we get to training camp, Gortat or Dragic will be gone. But at the same time, though, I like a front. Alex Len will probably not start in the beginning of the season, but eventually in the second half, Gortat can play the power forward position. He definitely has good athleticism to guard the fours, and he can shoot. He can shoot a good 12 to 15 footer. You know, his game is really matured, and I think in Jeff Hornacek's system, I think Hornacek is going to bring a Utah type of system of pick and rolls, back screens. Things like that where a lot of inside double screens, and I think that's going to benefit Gortat big time and Alex Len big time as well. So if Dragic is traded, though, Dragic, good player, he's a better fantasy basketball player than a reality basketball player. So
yeah.
you have to look at Dragic. He's not a starting point guard for a championship team. He's not.
No.
At the end of the day. So,
but to be fair,
in
Phoenix is far from being a championship team. So
no, but what I mean though, now they have Eric Bledsoe, who has more explosion in his game and also could defend, and he has more moxie in his game. So you just have to look at it now where Dragic, who's going to pick him up with that contract? And he's pretty much a borderline starter for a great team. So
yeah, this is kind of a surprise to see where Bledsoe ended up. Phoenix, the rumor was to Orlando for Aaron Aafalo, to Milwaukee.
That should have happened.
Yeah, I think everyone's a little bit surprised that it didn't.
I would have rather for the Clippers to acquire Aafalo, because I mean Jared Dudley and J.J. Redick, same type of player, and those players are not players that can lock you down defensively. Aafalo has very good on the ball skills defensively, and that would have been a better deal all the way around. Imagine Orlando being able to get Eric Bledsoe with a good young front line and Vucevic. And Vucevic and Tobias Harris and Mo Harkless, very good young players. And then you have Oladipo there. Bledsoe would have really flourished in that city, in the old arena, the old arena. But now it's the Amway Center.
No, I agree. I think it would have been a win-win for both teams, and I'm genuinely surprised that it didn't play out that way. The big free agent, obviously, and I've been sick and tired of talking about him, it feels like, for the last year and a half, is Dwight Howard.
Yep.
Four or five legitimate options. I don't really consider Golden State one. You're really looking, it looks like, the Lakers, the Rockets, and the Mavs. And he's already made a comment, which I find a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, he's a ridiculous guy in general.
He goes to Houston, which I think most of us feel is the best fit. He doesn't have to be the number one star offensively because they have James Harden. They have a young, talented team. And he apparently told Houston that he wants them to sign a third star. Well, I'm not quite sure what exactly gives him the right to do this. He's not LeBron. You know, I didn't like it when LeBron did that, pulled this whole thing. He's not LeBron. Mm-hmm. He's a guy you can barely keep in the fourth quarter of a game because he can't shoot a free throw.
Mm-hmm.
He's someone who's been consistently challenged and seems to not have the mental toughness to handle in L.A., which is fine. Some people don't. But you can't – how exactly are they supposed to acquire a third star and afford you and have any sort of team around? Trading ASIC and trading Lynn, well, that's fine, but you're not going to get a superstar there. You're not, Parsons is a nice player. You're not going to get. They have a good supporting cast for him. He'd be playing with a great coach in Kevin McHale, who may be able to actually teach him a post-up game.
Mm-hmm.
What am I missing here?
Yeah, and with Dwight Howard, what I'm really discouraged about with Dwight Howard is the lack of skill set to be able to make adjustments. Obviously, okay, Mike D'Antoni's system is a system that doesn't benefit centers, doesn't benefit big players. It benefits smaller lineups. Okay, we know that. But at the end of the day with Dwight Howard, you have players like Patrick Ewing, Hakeem Olajuwon, David Robinson. David Robinson had more versatile offensive game in college at the Naval Academy than Patrick and Hakeem. But when you look at those guys in the mid-'80s and the fact that they were basically in the paint, they basically couldn't create their own shot, really. They basically was able to score mostly on putbacks and score on and they did have, like, good post-up moves, for young players. But when they got to the league, they developed their games. And this is what I'm really discouraged about with Dwight Howard. Now, Dwight Howard puts up great numbers. He's physically gifted. He's strong. He's one of the best defensive players, not just centers, but best defensive players of our lifetime. But he has yet to really try to have his game grow. I'm disappointed that he did not be able to set up and establish a 12 to 15 foot jump shot so he can be able to fit in D'Antoni's system. He can't even run a pick and roll efficiently, and that's ridiculous. I don't care if you're 7'6 or 6'2. The pick and roll is something that's used all throughout not just professional basketball, but college basketball as well. High school basketball, right.
I ran it at Wayne Valley. It's a pick and roll. I may not have been able to dunk off of it, but I could hit an 18-foot jump shot. In the good old days, for those who are listening, I can barely hit anything now. I don't understand how Hakeem Olajuwon can tutor you and you get no better. And how you turn down
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Patrick Ewing as well in Orlando. Yeah. When Patrick Ewing was the assistant coach of Orlando, he had Patrick
That's
Ewing.
That's right.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar gave him a little bit of tutelage. It's ridiculous with him. And that's the thing. The thing is that he's bigger and more athletic than everyone else in this type of league. In the 80s, he would just be a regular center, period. He wouldn't even be at Artis Gilmore's level. And Artis Gilmore is a Hall of Famer, but he wouldn't even be at Artis Gilmore's level, meaning I'm saying from the standpoint of being at the top tier of centers. I'm not disrespecting Artis Gilmore, but that's what I mean. It's just no type of finesse, no type of touch, and it's ridiculous. And also Jack Sigma as well. Jack Sigma was assistant in Houston.
You have almost a man crush on Jack Sigma. It's interesting.
Oh, for sure. That guy. When you're a center leading the league in free throws as
free
a
throw
center,
percentage. Oh, unbelievable.
Oh my goodness, a free throw percentage, unbelievable. Jack
Sigma
was one of the most underrated players in the NBA.
He was, and no man could ever pull off a blonde fro like that.
That's right, blonde Jerry curls.
But, we had this discussion, and I'll ask you. Sean and I had this discussion two weeks ago, and Sean is not a Howard fan at all. Simply, his idea, his thought process being, how can this guy be the best center in basketball if you can't put him in the last 5 minutes because he cannot shoot a free throw?
And that's
he said that's the thing. I asked him, well, who would be your number one center? He said Hibbert. I said, for me, it would probably be Marc Gasol.
I would say Marc Gasol. Yeah, Hibbert, because I got to tell you with Hibbert. Hibbert, because I got to ask you a question. Like, okay, Hibbert, for example, could Hibbert drop 20 and 15?
In an individual game, yes, but not on a consistent basis, no.
Exactly. Now, with Marc Gasol, there's a difference in Marc Gasol, because Marc Gasol has such a unique skill set offensively, and he's become a good defensive player, just very smooth touch around the rim and everything like that. But at the same time, though, he's a great player, but still Dwight could do 30 and 25 one day. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, but the problem is at this point, Dwight would be doing that off of 12 dunks and 3 putbacks. It's an interesting discussion.
One other thing about Dwight Howard, but he underachieves so much, you know, and he could be so great, you know, and I kind of put him a little bit in the Shaq category, because Shaq was great and dominant, but imagine how great Shaq could have been if he was able to be more diverse offensively, you know,
And no, I couldn't agree more. Shaq to me is one of the more overrated. I mean, overrated is hard when you can average 30 and 15, but Shaq could have averaged 40 and 20. He was an athlete beyond anything, and he never developed a real offensive game. Never really developed. Was never a great free throw shooter. Shaq is probably the second or third best center I've ever seen. I would put Olajuwon above him. I would probably put him on par with Moses Malone. But Shaq had the talent to be better than all of them. They just didn't. Want to go a little bit into some of the other free agents. Obviously, Chris Paul is re-signed with the Clippers, which is no shock once Doc Rivers came about, decided to go to the Clippers. Thoughts? I guess the other big, Josh Smith.
Mm-hmm.
To me, he scares me. Somebody's going to offer him a max deal. He strikes me as the type of player who, once he gets that max deal, is going to become just a horror show.
No,
great talent.
I actually don't think so. Actually, I really think the Detroit Pistons are about to make an offer to him, and he had a 5-hour meeting with the Detroit Pistons. It looks like most likely he will sign with the Pistons. But I really see him being a leader, actually, with those young players. You have that front court of Andre Drummond, Greg Monroe, Josh Smith. Got no one below 6'10". You know, that is very scary. But Josh Smith, what he is, though, with him, he's not going to improve. You know what you're going to get from him. You have an extraordinary athlete that is a very good rebounder, very good defender, but he, of course, is not a diverse offensive player, which you will not need from him, actually. I think what he will bring to Detroit is a perfect marriage, a perfect fit. And then you have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who just got added drafted by the Pistons.
Yeah, sure.
And then you have Brandon Knight and also Jose Calderon. They're looking to re-sign also, actually. So the Pistons have, under Maurice Cheeks, and that's another thing, Maurice Cheeks is someone that deserved the head coaching job, and now he has it. And it's going to be great to see what he brings, and also how Josh Smith is now the leader of this team, basically, in the locker room. So,
and that scares me. Because Josh Smith has never reflected any kind of leadership ability whatsoever. You're right. He will be the locker. Yeah, he will be the leader of a team that is very young, has some talent, as you said, with Monroe and Drummond, KCP, and Knight. which is not, while not a playoff team yet, has the potential to get there. I think at a minimum you're going to see two, probably three of the playoff teams this year, Boston, Philly, and Milwaukee, fall off the map. So there'll be some openings in the second tier. I'm sorry. My bad. Smith can't shoot a three-pointer, but he thinks he can. Offensively, he's one of those players who thinks he's a great offensive player, and he's just not. And as good as he is defensively and as good as he is as a rebounder, when motivated, he can be very, very good. I wonder if his personality will allow him to be very, very good once he got the money that he thinks he deserves.
But I have one question to ask you about Josh Smith. Who has been the only stable player of a perennial playoff team for the past 5-6 years? Who's been the only player that's been there?
Horford.
Throughout? No, Horford was out. He was out for a long time. He was injured for a long time, one season. I'm talking about someone that who's been on the court throughout and has been consistent every season.
Well, Joe Johnson was there for 4 or 5 of the seasons.
When Joe left, though, they still made the playoffs. They were the same team when Joe Johnson left. That attributes to Josh Smith. That attributes to the versatility that he has and what he could do and be able to contribute. I mean, that's what I'm saying about him. Like, definitely he's not, you know, like I said, offensively he needs to play within his skill set, within his role. And also he has to improve his free throw percentage. I mean, he was an atrocious 52% last season. But at the same time, with defense and with him being there, I think he can be able to mature into the leader of the Detroit Pistons. And this team, and remember, the Eastern Conference is very weak. And they can not next year they'll be a playoff team, but I think the following year they will be a playoff team because Andre Drummond and Greg Monroe are just really developing into great players. So
yeah,
into,
I
not
agree
great players,
that,
excuse me, solid players. Let me not say great. Great is a word that I do not want to flash around.
Yeah.
So
I agree, and I agree. 2 years from now, potentially they could be there. I think it'll depend on the progress of Brandon Knight at the point guard, to be honest, to see where this team, see the potential of where this team can go. I think what else, you know, Tyreek Evans, and this is kind of shocking to me, a 4-year, $44 million offer from New Orleans, and a team that, are you going to play, has Eric Gordon, who have obviously has been quite hurt, has been injured on and off. Evans did not want to play the three, and that's what he would be playing if Gordon is healthy. Because you can't trade Gordon at this point with that contract. Are you surprised that the Pelicans would use their cap room on Evans?
Yeah, I'm shocked about it. I'm really shocked, and I think that Tyreek Evans, he never developed a perimeter game. As a three, you're going to have a consistent perimeter game. He doesn't have that. Why spend $11 million per on some, like they were able to make a great deal in getting Drew Holiday. It seems like they're going to have Ryan Anderson come off the bench. Why do that? Because I think you need a three that can spread the floor, especially when you have a Drew Holiday and an Eric Gordon that are slashers. And also they can hit outside shots too, but not consistently. You need a Ryan Anderson that can be able to, you know, they can, like Gordon and Holiday could drive to the hoop, be able to draw defenders, and they can be able to kick out to Ryan Anderson. Tyreek Evans is not that type of player. And unless they're trying to maybe see if Tyreek Evans could be a point forward type of player, which would be very interesting, actually, for him to handle the rock sometimes and things like that. But at the end of the day, though, he does not fit within their scheme. And, I just don't know. And I think Sacramento is not matching that. They will not match that. So
I think they will happily say goodbye.
Yeah, they'll happily do that, yeah. Yeah, and that's why Ben McLemore was drafted.
Exactly. So one quick thing, and then we'll go on to some baseball. Where do you think Howard ends up when it's all said and done?
I think the Dallas Mavericks.
Really?
I think the Dallas Mavericks. I really think so. I think Houston is in a bad place because they will not be able to get rid of Ashik and Lin's contracts, especially in that year of 2014-2015. Yeah, it's a poison. Yeah, they're going to be so strapped financially in those years, and I think Dallas, Mark Cuban's going to find a way to be creative, and Dallas, I see Dwight Howard being in Dallas.
Should be interesting.
Yeah. I could be wrong.
You could be, so. But I trust your judgment on this. But it's going to be interesting. Kind of switching gears a little bit.
Another thing. Another thing, no taxes either in Texas.
That is true. The advantage of the lack of Texas income tax, quite helpful,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to California, yep. where they're paying 12% Hey, yes. I'm a CPA. I know these things. So go to baseball. Also, in case you didn't know, David West, in the biggest non-surprise of the free agent season, signs a 3-year, $36 million extension with the Pacers, as he should. And that team is just... Wait, are you surprised by that?
No,
I'm surprised by the amount. Okay. And Tiago Splitter signs a 4-year, $36 million contract with the Spurs. Going to baseball, words that don't come out of my mouth very often, but we are at the midseason review. And there are a couple points that just, you have to start with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Yes, indeed.
The best record in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've been waiting for Pittsburgh to progress to a point where they're going to break that 20-year over 500 spot. We did not expect a progression to potentially 95 wins, and although I don't think they'll beat out St. Louis for the division, a legitimate run at the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, how has this happened?
Oh, no, I think it's very legit because you look at a team that started off the last 2 years, they started off very well, and they just – last year they were in first place in the NL Central. They just faded, and I think they faded with just the lack of a good good lineup, and they still don't have that. But I think the emergence of Pedro Alvarez really has set them
finally
apart from the past two seasons. Yeah, and him being able to really be that power hitter that he was projected to be, being the second pick out of Vanderbilt, and also Pedro Alvarez. Remember, he went to Horace Mann actually in the Bronx, so he's a local guy. So with him emerging, being able to put that power bat in the lineup consistently, and I think the leadership of Russell Martin is really big, especially for this young pitching staff, and they have a dynamic pitching staff. I mean, it's pretty loaded. We have Jeff Locke, young pitcher, 25 years old, 7-1 with 2.06 ERA. He's surprising everybody. AJ Burnett has been a stabilizing force. He's been solid since he was acquired by the Pirates from the New York Yankees. Wandy Rodriguez, who's always been a decent pitcher, and then you have Francisco Liriano, who's been tremendous this year. So far, Liriano, and then you have also Garrett Cole, 4-0, and he's been very solid coming up and the first pick of the draft last year. So it's just really that pitching staff, and also with Jason Grilly. Grilly is one of the top relief pitchers in all of baseball. Last year he was ridiculous. He was probably arguably the best middle reliever in baseball. Now he's the closer. He's been lights out. So that pitching staff can carry them far. And I picked them actually to be one of the wild card teams in the NL on my baseball preview on So Much to Talk About. I picked them to be one of the wild card teams. So I knew Pittsburgh was right on the cusp. And you look at Clint Hurdle. Clint Hurdle has been magnificent with young players. He's been really magnificent, and you look at what he did with the Colorado Rockies, leading them to 2007 World Series, and that was a very dynamic team with Troy Tulowitzki, young players, and a young Matt Holliday. He was Matt Holliday at the time, 27, and he had Garrett Atkins, who was decent at that time, and Brad Hopp, and Todd Helton was the veteran of that team, but they had a young team. Tulo was only 22 years old at that time. So
it does feel like he's been around
developing young players.
It does feel like him and he's been around a lot longer. And Tulo, one of the most underrated players in baseball. So before we get to our All-Star teams, I want to run through kind of the midseason awards for you. And the most obvious two-man race right now is the AL MVP, where I think you're really looking at Chris Davis, who's having an absolute brilliant year in Baltimore, where I know you had some good expectations, but obviously this was well beyond that, hitting 330 with 31 homers. And the defending Triple Crown winner, Miggy Cabrera, who's only hitting 370 with 26 home runs. I mean, you know, Baltimore staying in a very mediocre but yet surprising AL East, with the Red Sox really being stronger than most people anticipated. Baltimore hanging tough. Detroit in a very easy division, you know, is kind of just bidding time, tied with Cleveland right now, or practically tied with Cleveland.
Half game behind the Indians.
I'm assuming these two, and then probably Mike Trout would be third. Who would be your MVP at mid-year?
I got to go with Chris Davis. I have to go with him. The reason why is because Baltimore has been more consistent throughout the season. There's no excuse for the Detroit Tigers to be a half a game behind Cleveland. By now, they should have been leading that division in double digits with the talent that they have over these teams. Now, Detroit better be careful because these teams can catch up. I think Cleveland has a bright future. I think Kansas City has a bright future. And Minnesota arguably has the best farm system in baseball, all of baseball. So Detroit better take advantage right now because these teams are already contending with them, but there's no excuse for Detroit to be only five games over 500 with a pace of winning 86 games. They were expected to have the best record in the American League, especially in that division, and that's inexcusable. Now, it's not Miggy Cabrera's fault, but also, too, he has a Prince Fielder in that lineup as well, too. And I think with Crush Davis, he's doing everything on his own. Now, Manny Machado's been great, but Manny Machado's not a power hitter. You know, Adam Jones is great. You know, Adam Jones is incredible, but he's not like a exclusive power hitter. I think Chris Davis at times has carried this lineup. And I think he's been just a pleasant surprise. That 332 batting average really puts him up there, and I think he beats Miggy Cabrera as of now.
Okay, National League, and there's a couple players that you got to look at. Since when is Yadier Molina has always been a wonderful player, but nobody has ever remembered him being a 340 hitter, 350 hitter. Buster Posey, very good down in and also, I agree with you that Chris Davis should be, at this point, the midseason MVP. As good as Miggy is, having Fielder backing him up as your number four and the hitting that you have around you isn't even comparable to what is well beyond what Crash Davis has in Baltimore. Plus, they're playing in an easier division right now.
That's right. And the AL East is a beast. I mean, it's a strange division this year. Right.
So you're looking at the two catchers. You're looking at Molina, Buster Posey, maybe a Paul Goldschmidt down in Arizona, maybe a Carlos Gonzalez in Colorado. Those would be the three or four that come to mind. I actually like Gonzalez because that team, they lost to Owitzki. That's kind of hard to give someone who's under, give them a 500 team an MVP. But they're only 1.5 games out of the West. It would be, for me, either him or Yadier Molina. St. Louis has the second record, best record in baseball, so two games behind Pittsburgh. Who would you be looking at?
This is so tough. I think it's really a two-player race between Paul Goldschmidt and Carlos Gonzalez, Cargo, and I would have to give it to Cargo. I think Cargo is arguably the best player in baseball overall. Like along with you know, when you in the discussion, Mike Trout, in the discussion, Miguel Cabrera, I think Carlos Gonzalez is in that tier. He is such a diverse player. And when he's healthy, he can carry a team, and he's just more and more. And he's only 27. He doesn't turn 28 until October. Like, this kid, the sky is the limit for him, and he just gets better and better as a hitter. And I would have to give it to Cargo by a small margin, but Paul Goldschmidt is still there too. I mean, it's really tough, but I'll give it to Cargo because he's just such an overall dynamite player.
Probably the easiest award to pick this year, which I don't think there's really much discussion at the midway point, is the AL Cy Young. Very simple. Max Scherzer is 12-0. And, you know, second in the league in strikeouts. You know, he's gone deep into games. I don't think there's really much discussion. Do you agree? Or?
Well, Clay Buchholz, if he wasn't injured, if he didn't get injured, Clay Buchholz would be the Cy Young. Like, you know, if he wasn't injured. But I think you have to give now Scherzer the edge now because Scherzer is playing, you know, he's playing longer. But also his whip at .90, but also the strikeouts, 131 Ks and 110 innings, just great numbers for Max Scherzer. But I think if Clay was not on the DL, Clay would be the guy right now because Clay's been – Clay's incredible, 1.71 ERA. He leads the majors in ERA. So, and also remember, Boston is in first place. No one ever expected that, and he's really guided that staff, a staff that's been very inconsistent as usual.
Okay, the other name I want to kind of just give some props to, although I wouldn't put him quite at this level. Yu Darvish having a great year in Texas. With eight wins, a 2.7 ERA, and opponent's batting average under 200. Nationally,
he leads the majors in strikeouts. He leads
and
the majors in strikeouts, too.
That's right. National League, a little bit tougher. There's four or five names that you can throw out there. Obviously, a Clayton Jordan Zimmerman, a Clayton Kershaw, your boy Matt Harvey, Adam Wainwright. I mean, any of those names would be pretty fair game. I kind of want to give it to Harvey, and because, well, the Mets just don't have too much else to really look forward to, really have right now. and to be fair, I think he's a legitimate pick.
I think the Mets could end up having their second straight Cy Young Award winner for a team that's going to be under 500 once again this year. You have to give it to Matt Harvey. He's been absolutely dominant. I mean, from the standpoint of when you look at only 76 hits in 117 innings and 132 Ks, but I think what's going to – now, right now, he's the Cy Young Award winner. But going into September, I think Adam Wainwright, if he continues to pitch at this level, that he's pitching only 12 walks in 125 and two-thirds innings, if Wainwright – remember – into September, Harvey's going to be shut down. They're not going to have him pitch for more than 180, 190 innings. I think he's done in the end of August, by the end of August. So that's going to mess up his Cy Young Award chances. And remember, St. Louis, they're in a pennant race right now. They're trying to win the NL Central with the Reds and the Pirates, you know. So if Wainwright has solid, amazing starts in September, which I see him having, and he wins 20 games, then he will win Cy Young. But right now, Harvey's the Cy Young.
I also would like to see Wainwright, because Wainwright has been a guy for the last 5 years, probably the most underrated pitcher in baseball, winning 18, 19, 20, 21 games, and kind of always in the top three or four in the Cy Young, but I don't believe he's ever won it. And
yeah,
not that I'm one
it.
Of those guys who believes in a career, you know, a career whatever, but I would be pretty happy for him if he won the award. So
yeah, and Wainwright was, remember, you know, he also was out for Tommy John surgery too, you know. So
the other quick thing I wanted to mention, I'm assuming your National League manager of the year would be Clint Hurdle. I don't know how you could go anywhere else. American League, it's kind of a two team race for me. It would be John Farrell in Boston, Terry Francona in Cleveland.
I would go with John Farrell because they're in a much tougher division, and Boston has just been, and also too, there was so much dysfunction with that organization last year, so much dysfunction, and he's the man, like, definitely to be able to turn him around. And he was traded, which is very weird. He was traded, another Boston leader that was traded. You know, like, but instead the Red Sox acquired him. So very interesting.
Well, let's kind of go through where your All-Stars would be. We got about 15 minutes. And you start off, as we said, we start off with probably the toughest call in baseball, the American League first base. But I guess whoever you have, you're going to have the other one as the DH. So, mm-hmm. you know, with apologies to Edward Encarnacion, you're looking at either Davis or I'm assuming you're looking at Davis at first and probably you move Miggy Cabrera to third or to DH.
Oh, because you don't remember there's no DH in there's going to be it's at Citi Field this year. So,
oh, that's right.
There won't be a DH. So you're looking at someone like a David Ortiz. They have to put on the team. There's no question. So David Ortiz is going to have to play first base. You could possibly have four first basemen in that roster, which has happened before. You've had, you know, there have been, I forgot what year it was, but there were four first basemen in the American League roster a few years ago. So Chris Davis, as of July 1st, for the All-Star balloting, well-deserved, he's leading the balloting, actually.
Second base, a little bit more difficult. I would probably go with Robinson Cano, who's kind of kept the Yankees until the last couple of weeks above water. It's mm-hmm. kind of difficult whether you love the Yankees or hate them when your entire team is injured and no team has gone through more injuries than the Yankees have this year. Cano has been fantastic for them, hitting around 300 with 20 homers and 50 RBIs. Would that be
well,
your pick at second?
He's a little below. Definitely. He's a little below 300. But definitely I think Cano, yeah, there's no question about it. But the young Jason Kipnis will make an All-Star appearance. He will definitely, yeah, he has been just really amazing, and he may get some MVP talk if he continues to put up the numbers he's putting up. I mean, he can end up being – he has a – because last year with Kipnis, he almost – he was at around 2020 last year, actually, Jason Kipnis. So he has a lot of talent, and then definitely, too, I think he's going to do 2020 again, definitely, maybe 30-20. So he's an interesting player.
Shortstop, you know, I yearn for the good old days of the discussion with A-Rod, Nomar, Tejada, and Jeter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're not quite in that generation, but we have a couple retreads that you're kind of looking at, a Johnny Peralta in Detroit, a J.J. Hardy potentially in Baltimore. Those would be kind of the thoughts that come to my mind. Anyone else mm-hmm. that you'd want to put in?
Pretty much those are the guys, yeah. I think, shortstop is very weak this year overall. So Hardy and Peralta, just the obvious choices.
Yeah. Third base is kind of interesting because, again, if you have no DH, you're looking at Cabrera possibly playing third. And then you have, mm-hmm. obviously, Evan Longoria, who's an annual pick, and mm-hmm. stud out of Baltimore, Manny Machado.
Yeah. Yeah. You can end up having – yeah, all three of them. I think – well, Miggy Cabrera is leading in voting, so he's the obvious guy and obvious, you know, the better player. But, yeah, Longoria and Machado should both get All-Star nods, and especially in the National League where pitchers are going to be pinch hit. There's going to be a lot of pinch hitting, a lot of pitching changes, things like that. So you're going to have to build your offensive bench, and Machado and Longoria will do that.
So who are you looking at? Obviously, Mike Trout is a given for the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
Who else are you looking at, really, in a relatively weak American League outfield?
Oh, very weak. I mean, you look at Mike Trout, Adam Jones is obviously an All-Star. Jose Bautista, obviously an All-Star. Those guys lead in the voting as of yesterday, July 1st. But then Nelson Cruz, no doubt, deserves to make the All-Star game. He's really been the guy, the consistent power hitter for the Texas Rangers in there. They're still doing well even without Josh Hamilton, who has totally plummeted over the past year, 365 days pretty much. But I like Coco Chris. I think he deserves to be in the All-Star game. He's been very consistent this year for the Oakland A's, and he's almost at 10 home runs himself, and he has around 16 stolen bases. and a good OPS. And I also like, as well, Jacoby Ellsbury. He has 32 stolen bases. He leads the American League in stolen bases. He only has one home run, but you look at that team, Boston, there, they have the best record in the American League. And he's really spearheaded that lineup, especially after the injury problems he had last year. But the power numbers, I was hoping to see more power numbers from him, but he's still been solid.
Okay, quickly to the starting pitchers, obviously Max Scherzer and Yu Darvish were the two that came to mind off the top of my head. Who else are you looking at?
Clay Buchholz, he should be coming back.
Well, I was going to say, will he be back?
Yeah, if he doesn't come back, then you have Bartolo Colon, who is really surprised, the ageless one. He's really surprised everyone. And he's not a power pitcher anymore. He's more finesse, more location. I like Felix Hernandez, perennial all-star, no question about it. Hisashi Iwakuma from Seattle came in and has been totally one of the top starters in Major League Baseball. And Chris Sale should represent the Chicago White Sox. They've had a dismal year, but Sale should be their representative. Even though his record's under 500, he still has a good ERA and a good whip. So I see those guys. Matt Moore has a lot of wins, but I think he's more of a guy to be that last one, you know, when they do the final roster spot voting. Yeah, I think he'll make that. So, yeah, those are my starters.
Relievers, I mean, I guess there's a couple of the obvious picks. Joe Nathan in Texas has been fantastic. Casey Jansen in Toronto. I mean, obviously Mariano Rivera is just a no-brainer,
right.
Although he may just be the honorary pick. Not for any other – I mean, obviously he would still be worthy as a player, but you know, anyone else that comes to mind?
Yeah, I think Casey Jansen won't make it. The reason why is because you look at Grant Balfour and Glenn Perkins. They have been lights out for the past couple of months. So I see, you know, Rivera, Nathan, Balfour of Oakland. And remember, Oakland has a winning record, too. Glenn Perkins in Minnesota, and Minnesota's almost at 500. They're not that far away. And Kansas City doesn't have an obvious rep, so I like Greg Holland to rep Kansas City because he's been excellent for them. So I see those five closers.
All right, going national. Catchers, obviously we've discussed Molina and Posey. The first baseman, you have Joey Votto. You're looking at, you know, Freddie Freeman's been a nice player this year. Adrian Gonzalez, while not worthy of his contract, has been solid out in L.A. I'm assuming Votto is the starter?
Yeah, Votto is leading in voting, actually. He's leading in voting. So, yeah, I mean, he should start, but his numbers aren't comparable to Paul Goldschmidt or even Alan Craig. Alan Craig has been really solid. First base is so tough in the National League. So tough. You also have as you mentioned, Adrian Gonzalez, who's doing well, but yeah, it's really, really so tough. But I have to go with three first basemen in Votto, Goldschmidt, and Alan Craig. Actually, I would go with him over Freddie Freeman.
Oh, second base, you have a couple. You have the old guard, and Brandon Phillips, who's been going to the All-Star game, it feels like forever. Matt Carpenter has been solid in St. Louis. You know, who else are you thinking? Or is that kind of where you are, where you're at?
I'm thinking, yeah, Carpenter and Brandon Phillips. So what could end up happening is Craig could be snubbed. You know, Craig could be on the final voting, being a candidate for the final ballot. But if Carpenter gets in. So, and then Freddie Freeman could get in. So I see Phillips and Carpenter, no doubt.
Shortstop, the obvious, if he's healthy, best shortstop in baseball is Troy Tulowitzki. Who else is even, I'm not even sure what other names you would throw in.
Oh, John Segura.
John Segura is out of Milwaukee.
He's been incredible this year. I mean, there's no doubt about him making it. 11 home runs, 24 steals. 861 OPS, and then Ian Desmond has a shot as well. He's really picked it up of late, and he's a good, solid player. And then also, God, you got Ezra Cabrera, too, leading the National League in stolen bases. So That's a tough category. I mean, I would Cabrera will probably be the only rep for San Diego, so he would get in over Desmond. So I would put Segura, Cabrera, and Tulowitzki.
Third base. Well, we know who the starter is going to be. For every Mets fan, I guess the hope and probably the right choice in David Wright.
He is the right choice. Yeah, no question.
I mean,
about
the only
it.
Other the only other third baseman from that I can even think of is Ryan Zimmerman, but he certainly hasn't had the same year. Are there other third basemen that should be coming into play?
You know, Pedro Alvarez, even though his average is low, he's been that guy, that power, that consistent power hitter for the Pittsburgh Pirates, really has been arguably their most valuable player, arguably because you still have McCutcheon, but Alvarez has really stepped up. So I would just go with David Wright and Pedro Alvarez.
Well, the outfield in the National League is better than the American League. A couple pretty easy choices. We've talked about Carlos Gonzalez. Carlos Gomez is a pretty logical choice as well.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew McCutcheon, not having the same statistical year he had a year ago, but still the leader on that team. Who else are you thinking?
No question, Carlos Beltran. No question about that, about him. You know, St. Louis has been one of the top teams in the National League. They don't have the best record anymore with Pittsburgh over them, but I think they'll pass Pittsburgh. I think Dominic Brown will be the representative for the Phillies. Him and Cliff Lee will both be in there in the game. And also Jay Bruce should get some look as well, and also Hunter Pence, too, as well. So it's very tough. I mean, Starlin Marte as well. I mean, God, lot of good outfielders. And Justin Upton has faded, so unfortunately I don't think he should get in over the six names that I mentioned. But and Kadiah, Mike Kadiah.
Of course, he's on a 27-game hitting streak right now.
Right, and leading the National League. He's only 1/100th of a point behind Yadier Molina. So
going to the starters. A couple, obviously, we've talked about Matt Harvey, Jordan Zimmerman, Clayton Kershaw, potentially Mike Leake in Cincinnati. It's been surprisingly good, although I don't know if he's an all-star. Madison Baumgartner out in San Fran. There probably should be someone out of Atlanta that I'm not thinking of. Maybe Mike Minor. Who else?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the
names
that come to my mind.
Yeah, Mike Minor, because he's 8-3. He's just under 3 his ERA. Mike Minor should be in there. I mean, you have pretty much Jeff Locke probably won't get in because he doesn't really have the power numbers and he's walked a lot of hitters, too. Wow, but you have to have a Pittsburgh. I mean, well, Jason Grilly will probably represent from the bullpen side, but I would go Matt Harvey, Clayton Kershaw, Patrick Corbin, who's 9-0, Adam Wainwright, Jordan Zimmerman. Strasburg could probably still get in, even though he was injured, but he's still dominant. And Shelby Miller has a chance, but he's kind of faded a little bit. So I would say those guys that I mentioned, and Mike Minor as well, and Baumgartner should get in too.
Quickly, Shelby Miller, your National League Rookie of the Year, or Puig?
I would say...
Or someone else.
Right now. Shelby Miller, right now. But Puig could end up doing it.
Yeah, I would agree. American League, to be honest, I can't really think of a rookie that's been that relevant.
There hasn't really been... that guy that I can really think of that is really, I mean, you have to go with Iwakuma. Iwakuma is the guy.
That makes
sense. He's the rookie here. So
kind of the old Ichiro.
We're thinking of the young players. You know what I mean?
Yeah, kind of Ichiro style. He's a rookie, but he was playing in the Japanese league for years. So we got a minute to go, and I kind of first of all, Nabate,
actually,
great having you on the show.
Oh, great having you on the show. My mistake, Iwakuma is not a rookie. He's a second-year guy. So that's my mistake on that. So, yeah.
Well, then I just can't ask you back then just because of that arrow. But I want you to give a little bit of love to your show. So much to talk about. One of the better sports shows. Batel is one of the better interviewers you'll see in not only the New York area but pretty much anywhere. There's no one more knowledgeable. Give yourself a little bit of pub right here.
Yeah. So much to talk about comes on 9 p.m. Channel 57, Time Warner, 34 Verizon Fios at 85, I believe, RCN, Manhattan Cable, 9 p.m. every Wednesday night. And you can check me out on Twitter, NabateIsleSmta. That's my Twitter handle.
Okay. Nabate Isles, for Nabate Isles, Seth Kamen, Seth and Sean, next week we'll be back. I'd say better than ever, but I don't know. At least we'll be back pretty well. Good night, everybody.
All right, good night.